This is Radio Freethinker, episode 78.
Welcome to Radio Freethinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is Ethan, your freethinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver.
And this is Don, your political science and philosopher. Philosopher. Yeah, it's a little empty in here today. It's just me and Ethan in today's show, but we have an big show planned for today.
We have an excellent show planned for today. Later on, we're going to have an interview that I did at TAM. In fact, our last TAM interview with the cast of the Reality Check podcast. It's going to be lots of fun, so stay tuned for that. Don, can you believe that it's the last day of August? Tomorrow is September. Time has flown by. What has happened to time?
I don't know. Time is strange. It's bizarre. Actually, time, according to some philosophical people, doesn't really even exist. It's sort of like a shadow. It's not really there. It's just the absence of something else. But speaking of time, you've been kind of busy lately, have you not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been always busy week for skepticism in Vancouver. We had our annual meeting for CFI to discuss events and activities here in Vancouver. It's a great time to come out and volunteer, help out. We also had an anti-stoning rally here in Vancouver.
Is this some kind of drug thing, or is it something more serious?
It's a bit more serious than drugs, actually. This was put on by the Iranian Solidarity Group of Vancouver, and it was in support of Sakia Ashitani, I believe I'm saying that correctly, who is an Iranian woman who is sentenced to be stoned to death for adultery. It's sort of been a case in the news lately. And last Saturday, they had this rally outside the art gallery here in Vancouver. And, it's against stoning, but it's also, I think, a movement designed to see civil rights, civil liberties extended to Iran, and sort of a grassroots movement to basically make some of the barbaric and, frankly, medieval tortures that are going on in Iran, remove them from the 21st century. Now, the Iranian Solidarity Group, they managed to stage this rally in over 100 cities around the world. And CFI felt that this was an extremely important issue, so we participated in the rally. We were there. In fact, we even gave a brief talk to the assembled people there. And hopefully that'll be up on our webpage very soon.
I think there's one important thing we should make a bit of a distinction here. I was actually in a rally with this very same group. Was it almost a year ago now? With regards to the quote-unquote Green Revolution or the protest over the elections in Iran. And one of the distinctions I just want to make is the stoning in that, and a lot of these theocratic-type policies are implemented by more of an elite or a minority of the group, but a very powerful group. Because Iran itself has had actually quite a long history of being progressive for that area, but currently it's under a theocratic regime, which emphasizes the worst of it. Mm-hmm. I might point out some of the things that have happened in Saudi Arabia, which doesn't have any kind of redeeming quality, no offense to our Saudi listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure you have many of them. Another thing they were doing at this rally is they were circulating postcards addressed to the UN designed to prevent Ahmadinejad, Ahmadinejad.
Yeah, that guy.
That guy from entering the General Assembly of the United Nations. The idea being that if we put international pressure on Iran, we can force them to adopt human rights and an acceptable 20th century form of justice that doesn't involve torture and execution. Will that succeed? That remains to be seen. But I think it is a worthy cause to consider joining. I did look up the Iranian Solidarity Group's webpage, and they have a sort of a list of goals, objectives that they want to see achieved. And a lot of these are very in line with the free thought secular movement. Two of them really caught my eye. One of them is the unconditional freedom of expression, thought, organization, demonstration, and strike. And I think that really speaks to sort of the free expression aspect that I think CFI and every other group really wants to see.
Well, I think, too, and context is really important here. When they use the term unconditional, actually, I didn't like that term, unconditional. But unconditional is against a backdrop of severe repression.
Sure.
So I wouldn't agree with unconditional free speech in Canada because I believe in hate crime laws and that type of thing. But in this particular context, I think it's an appropriate term to use because they do. It's a very policed state vis-a-vis free speech. The ability to strike and all that.
Mm-hmm. The other point that definitely caught my eye was the complete separation of religion and state. Not only that, judiciary, education, and religious freedom and atheism as a private matter. So separating religion from the legal justice system as well as government itself.
I like that one little bit that you had in there, and I'm assuming this is accurate from their postcard. Religious freedom and atheism, because quite often atheism gets wrapped into religion when, again, I mean, atheism is almost antithetical to religion. It's the not allowing religion at all. It's a disavowing of religion. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they would actually put that separate, actually, I kind of like that.
Yeah, well, they definitely seem to be a group that was aiming for a secular society. I think they recognize that the danger that when you have a society that is a theocracy, you know, running your country, the damage that can be done. Now, speaking of religion and damage and that sort of thing, we often talk about those anyway. But Don, you put a recent blog post up.
I did. I was looking at Facebook, and one of my friends had posted this video on Fox News about one gentleman who proposed, and I put "proposed" in quotes, to set up a gay bar next to the proposed Islamic center in New York, which has been generating a little bit of controversy in the United States, with the quote-unquote intent of promoting understanding and tolerance between the gay community and the Islamic community. And taken on that surface, not a bad idea. But I had a big issue with it, because one, it was on Fox News, it was actually on Glenn Beck. And the person promoting it was very disingenuous about this. Really, what my blog post was about is that sometimes people will support a similar cause that we do. So, for example, I don't like the idea of building any religious institutions anywhere in the country. But that doesn't mean that I support people who have a similar cause necessarily, because sometimes their reasons for not supporting that place, for example, aren't atheist causes, but something quite different. For example, with this particular building, the Islamic Center in New York, the vast majority of people who are against it aren't against it because they don't believe in religion or religious institutions, but because it's Arab and it's Muslim. And there's strong, strong overtones of racism and bigotry involved. And I think it's dangerous, as an ethical atheist, to be drawn into that crowd. So, again, the friend said, hey, I like this idea. I don't know. I don't want to support those people, mm-hmm. even if they have a similar aim in this one particular instance, because in the long run, it works against us. I mean, the Tea Party, for example, is far from a pro-atheist, pro-civil rights type group. Right? I mean, it's the antithesis of that. So again, the whole point of the blog post was just to say that the enemy of my enemy is not necessarily my friend, and that we have to be careful as to who we support, even if we have common cause.
Right. And it's a discussion that's been going on in the skeptical community for a while as well. You know, we've talked before about free speech issues. You know, supporting, for example, someone like, you know, Ann Coulter to come to Canada and spew horrible, horrible things. Or someone else to, Fred Phelps, for instance. But you know, there is sort of this debate about whether or not we need to be a bit more choosy in picking who we're actually going to support.
Well, and that was one of the things. I mean, I don't think it's logically inconsistent for me to say I don't support the building of an Islamic center, and I don't support the Tea Party. You know, and those can be two diametrically opposed. So I do not support Ann Coulter, but I don't support suppressing a free speech, although I am for hate crimes, which I think she's guilty of, but that's a whole other issue.
I see. Okay, well, shifting gears from that, let's go to Japan, actually, because there's a great skeptical win here. As a scientific nation, Japan has come out to slam homeopathy, which is just wonderful. The physician to the Japanese emperor, Akito, I suppose, and several top scientists have slammed homeopathy as an absurd medicine. They have urged healthcare workers to stay clear of it, as it has been growing in popularity in Japan. Now, Ichirō Kanzawa, who chairs the Science Council of Japan, said that homeopathy has no scientific basis and is absurd, and that medical workers must play the role of spreading science. They must become science popularizers to deflect this sort of ridiculousness that is homeopathy. And this article has been sort of making the rounds on the internet. Several prominent Japanese doctors and scientists are making it very clear that homeopathy is not a valid science or medical option for people who, you know, need treatment for whatever reason. The Japan Medical Association and the Japanese Association for Medical Sciences has both issued statements of agreement with Ichirō Kanzawa. Now, the whole controversy began when there was a report of a two-month-old baby who died in October of 2009 from cerebral hemorrhage or vitamin K deficiency. And the child was given a homeopathic remedy instead of normal treatment, which would be a vitamin K. Now, my question is, why in so many of these cases do we have to have a baby dying before people start to listen to scientists and doctors about things like homeopathy?
Because, and this ties in so great with my blog point, is that people sit there and they develop a fear of big business. You know, you had the big failure of the financial crisis, or you hear that Pfizer released a chemical that killed some people. Therefore, by association, all chemical companies, all pharmaceutical companies must be bad. And that fear leads people, well, anything else has got to be better. So they support things like homeopathy, even though evidence shows time and time again that it doesn't work. It, in fact, it is, as you say, dangerous, and that comes to our light when people... In fact, I wonder how many people out there right now are suffering. They're not dying, but they're suffering because they believe in this homeopathic-type bullcrap, right? I mean, the whole philosophy of like cures like is just insane. And even if that was true, these homeopathic substances don't contain even the like. They only contain the spirit of the like, which...
True, yes. Yes, and it makes you wonder just how much... You consider how much money, like, alternative medicine is pulling in compared to science-based medicine, and it's drastically different. People always make this assumption that drug companies are raking in the cash, and, you know, alternative medicine is this sort of altruistic medical field. No, it's not. It's making billions and billions of dollars. And again, in this case, in Japan, another person has died because of this.
You know, and there's an interesting contrast, too, because, I mean, remember, we won the war. And this royal family is, like, you know, on the losing side. And yet, conversely, the other royal family, the Windsors in England, and notably Prince Charles, the heir to the British crown, and sadly enough, and you'll hate this part, the monarch of Canada-to-be, is a strong supporter of homeopathy and a lot of other woo-woo type stuff.
He's a big, like, into natural medicine and organic foods and all kinds of...
Although, you know, I think I know his reason. I think he's hoping that his mom will get sick and he'll say, oh, don't take Western medicine. Take this homeopathy. It'll cure you right up. Because, I mean, he's been itching for the throne for a long time now. And...
Yeah, I don't know if that's considered libel or not, but...
What? How could it possibly be libel if it's something he supports and he would probably do anyhow, right?
Yeah. I don't know if the assassination of royalty is still popular.
Oh, no, you said the assassination. I merely said that he would promote homeopathic cures for his mom if she got ill.
I see. Well, let's take a commercial break here on Radio Free Thinker, and we'll be back with some more after this.
A long time ago, in a city far, far away,
CITR
was born. In the decade ahead, America will be in space.
CITR
is already there. Astronaut Neil Armstrong had this to say about
CITR.
It's one small step for man.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Herbert R. Tarlick, Chairman.
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your Friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, The Kiss Store, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free Friends card, and feel the love.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker here. So Don, one of the stories that was sort of working its way around the blog sphere and internet sphere has been the report on the...
It's the final report, supposedly final report, on the IPC.
Right.
That was stimulated by, quote-unquote, was it
email? ClimateGate or...
ClimateGate, yes.
Yes.
So this group, which reports back to the UN, said that they need to have more stricter controls on the body. Some of its recommendations are, for example, that the committee recommends the UN body should appoint an executive director to handle day-to-day operations. Good. The current limit of two 6-year terms should be reduced, and that the panel should include people who are not from the community, the climate science community, in order to increase the credibility and independence of this.
So they think in order to increase the credibility of this panel, they need people who are not experts on the material.
Yes, yes. So in order to show you the confidence they have in the scientific evidence, they need to bring in, I don't know, a psychic or something like that to show you that this evidence... No, okay, they probably wouldn't bring in a psychic. But a lot of these measures, I think, are intended to be political stonewalls for it. I mean, another one that they had recommended is that there be an independent committee to review the workings of this independent committee, which just adds another layer of management on top of it. The adding in people who are not scientists into the board, on one hand, says, well, that gives you a more rounded out view, but the point of this board is to review the scientific literature and point out the salient points of it, mm-hmm. hand that over to the politicians and other groups who then work out what the science means and how it's implemented. And the third thing about making the 6-year terms shorter and maybe not consecutive is when you get into this position, you are going to be under a lot of political pressure. And the concept of job security is important. I mean, judges, when they're appointed for life. And unless they do something really atrocious, you can't get rid of judges. And that allows them to be independent of the politics that surrounds them. And that's part of the whole point of all of this. In fact, actually, one of the things that was really telling, in the article that I read, to be fair, from the BBC, which I'm assuming reports more or less accurately what it did, so there might be some issues with that, but it said one of the main things that it said was that overall it thought the IPC's assessments were largely successful, but the body's response to revelations of errors in 2007, which was ClimateGate, was slow and inadequate. I.e., they had really bad press.
So how will bringing on a non-expert do anything to help them get better press? Unless they're bringing on like a media consultant.
Yeah, no, and that's not their job, right? I mean, they're not designed to handle that. In fact, one of the things that they've been slammed for was the Himalayas were supposed to be melted all gone by 2038, I believe, is the date. And that's what they made in the last assessment, which I think was 5 years ago or 4 years ago. But it looks like that those models were slightly off, and that although one or two of the glaciers are going to probably be gone. The rest of them are pretty much more or less safe. But think about it. If you thought that the major water source for the Indian subcontinent, which has more than, well, has about, what is it, a sixth of the population, it's got over 1.5 billion people there. And that was going to disappear, therefore leading to huge famine. And you knew that was coming up quickly, or you had belief that it was. Should you sit there and say, well, the models say it's going to happen, but I'm going to keep that to myself? No, you say, listen, our models say this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then as the models improved, they say, oh, okay, we were slightly off. And science self-corrects. But I mean, if I told you, Ethan, that, you know, ISIS, I have a medical test that says you could die in a year, should I tell you about that or not? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, of course you want to know. Even if it might be wrong, it's better to know and correct itself. So ultimately, these recommendations seem to be political smokescreen. You know, the idea is to make it more plausible deniability, more obfuscation of the science data. So it's not as clear, it's not as clear cut, and a link to make it more politically acceptable. Because, I mean, that's been one of the big hits since ClimateGate, has been the PR has turned way against these institutions when really they shouldn't be.
Yeah. I also suspect that this could be an opportunity to get certain nations and certain institutions who are opposed to the whole notion of climate change could get some of their people on board, which could really railroad this whole process of establishing. I mean, if they can slow down the process of just gathering evidence, then that can really, I think, handicap the whole process of, you know, fixing these problems and making, you know, changes.
Well, and not only that, I mean, it's one of those things. It's another form of denial of science, right? I mean, if the politicians don't want to move on the recommendations from the IPCC. That's one thing. But the IPCC is intended to be a purely scientific review to give people the proper information they need. And by preventing it from doing that job is preventing the scientific method from working. I mean, that's part of it. Because another thing that reiterates from all this is the idea of funding and sponsoring that, right? As climate science becomes more of a taboo subject, people are less likely to award grants, which means less research is done. And there's a snowballing effect, no pun intended there.
Right, right. Well, quite the conundrum that we have here with climate science.
Definitely something to keep your eyes open on the future as to
what. But you know what people should keep their eyes on is the Reality Check podcast, which our good buddy Elon is a member of, operating out of Ottawa. And we have an interview with him that I recorded at TAM. So let's go to that right now here on Radio Free Thinker.
Hello, listeners. You're listening to Radio Free Thinker at TAM, the amazing meeting in Las Vegas. This is Ethan, your free thinking historian, and I'm here with the host of the Reality Check podcast, Jonathan Abrams.
Hello.
Co-host, Adam Gardner.
What's up, what's up?
And you, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know me? We did a radio show together.
What? When was this?
This radio show, Radio Freethinker. we started it together. Don't you remember, Elon? That's me.
Sorry. Well, Mr. Elon, welcome to the show. So this Reality Check podcast.
That shtick was awesome, by the way. That's going to kill in Vancouver. That kind of thing is funny in Vancouver. You'll see.
Yeah, we're going to get lots of letters for that one.
Like, they'll all just be like, who is that, Elon, anyway?
You've been on the show a few times in the past, like, couple of months.
That's true. There was the one-year anniversary show.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Which was only,
you guys,
like,
doing a great job.
I don't know, like 20 episodes ago or something. Well, gentlemen, we're at the amazing meeting. How are you enjoying yourselves?
I'm having a blast. This place is great. So many cool people to talk to and meet, and could hobnob with both the mini pseudo celebrities and the skeptical movement, as well as all the smart and funny, just normal people like us.
Well, and there's even real celebrities. Like, Adam Savage was just, remember yesterday when we tried to go for, or no, we went for dinner, and then Adam Savage was like holding court at this table.
It was like 1 a.m.
Like 1 a.m., and sort of everyone's sitting around. Adam Savage from Mythbusters. I don't know.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And he's like, you know, he's a sort of, you could tell everyone's around watching him and then like trying to tell jokes to make him laugh. And sort of like sometimes they'd fail, and he'd be like, And sometimes he'd go, oh! And then everyone at the table, you could tell, is like swelling of pride. Like, we just made this, oh, it was cool.
Excellent.
It's awesome.
Yeah, there's also Richard Dawkins is here this year. Another true celebrity.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Well, James Randi's been on the Johnny Carson show. Like,
I think, yeah, he's a genuine celebrity.
20 times.
Too,
yeah, absolutely.
Many listeners know that James Randi was our first interview ever.
Right.
And we just got him for an interview at this TAM, finally. And, like, it's about time. We're approaching episode 100. And we never had an interview with the amazing James Randi.
Right. So tell me about this show that you guys do. Do you usually have interviews, or what's the format?
The format is we've settled on a format where we do three topics every episode, usually two major ones, how we call it in the back room, and one minor one, like a myth of the week. And sometimes we'll do an interview when, say, I'm feeling too lazy to research a topic. I'll call someone up on Skype and interview them. And we just basically pick every week a topic that interests us that we want to talk about. And since there's about four or five of us on the show at any given time, and there's only three topics per episode, we take a break every week or so.
Yeah, it's really fun, because it's sort of like, you know, you're going through your regular life, and then, like, now for me in my life, like, whenever sort of I'm having a conversation with someone, all of a sudden they'll mention something like, that would be a good topic for the reality check. I was like, let me send an email to myself. So I've got, like, every couple of days I have, like, a bunch of emails I've sent to myself throughout the day.
And now we have such a large back catalog, we're approaching 100 episodes now, that, like, in just generic conversations, like, yeah, we talked about that on our show, so you should check out that episode. And I wish I had an encyclopedic knowledge of every episode number and topic we discussed.
We have someone that said they're going to make a Wikipedia page for us. Hopefully she'll, like, list every episode and every topic we covered and who's talked about what and rank them.
Then they'll get them flagged for deletion.
We need a Mike LaSalle to make a trcfans.net page for us.
Well, you guys have been on the air for a while. Well, you're not actually on the air. You're a download-only podcast, correct?
Mm-hmm. We did broadcast on our local university radio station for, like, 2 hours once, and I just completely screwed it up. I was just terrible at playing. I played the episode, but my segues doing it live was just awful. I can't do live radio. I'm so glad that this is being recorded.
Yeah, it's definitely impressive, you Radio Free Thinker guys, off the cuff.
Oh, yeah, my segues are second to none when I say, okay, next topic is...
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Why don't we go to a commercial, the same commercial that we always have every episode with Strong Bad.
That is the best commercial of all time. You cannot top it.
If you ever hear me do a really good segue, that's like the fifth take. Try to get a good segue.
The good thing that you get on Radio Freethinker, because it's live as opposed to the reality check, is sometimes you'll have, like, Rob running in late and you hear him, like, out of breath, like, sorry guys, I just got here.
That brings up a good point. Sometimes on Radio Freethinker, someone will bring up something and I'll look over at Don or Daniel, or they'll look at me, and we'll be giving this look like, you're an idiot. Why are you saying this? I'm going to tear you apart. But you guys don't seem to disagree very often. What do you, like, work out your differences off the air or something?
Oh, we fight, and I tend to edit those out, because we want all the kids listening to the show that, you know, us elders get along just fine.
There was, like, a 30-minute argument one episode.
Which one was that?
I think
it was a while ago.
When Darren wanted to bring up the... Should we get into details?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Did I talk about the thing with Xander and Darren about the...
No.
About, what was it? The multiple
what is the story history of the reality show?
Okay, you tell one story, I'll tell another one.
So when Darren... He's very big on charity and, like, Oxfam and stuff, which is a very noble cause, and he's a bleeding heart. And he wanted to do an episode on morality and how skeptics, if they want to be morally consistent, you know, if you're going to save a kid drowning in a wading pool that you walk by, you might as well also save starving children in Africa. It's no different. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted the podcast to be a science podcast. You know, we talk about scientific controversies and curiosities, but here he's talking about morality. But, you know, so we had an argument back and forth about that, but it was important to him, so he did it and it was fine. Got it out of the system.
And it was also because, remember, that was the week that you were listed on some big website? There was some big
okay,
deal.
Okay, so that was the week where we had an article published on autoskeptics.org about the Canadian Blood Services doing some kind of pseudoscience, and that made it to Slashdot, which is a very big tech news aggregator. And so we were getting a ton of hits on our site for that article, and I wanted that episode to talk about that issue of Canadian Blood Services. So I wanted that topic to go first in the show. But to Darren, this topic of morality was such a big, important thing for him he wanted it to go first, so that was a bit of a spat back and forth about
that. You're getting the deep inside info.
Yeah. So what do you guys usually disagree on?
Sometimes we disagree because John and I want Darren to give us one of his Vex in the Beach, which he has in his fridge, and Darren's like, no, you can't have it unless you, like, get through two segments first, because Darren's always, like, wants us to leave his house, like, really,
like,
really quickly.
He's driving. Yeah, it's
yes, so we record our show in Darren's apartment, so the big fights are about getting his alcohol.
Do you guys often record under the influence?
No, actually, there's only one episode where I did that, and it took too many takes for me to say the intro correctly.
It was so
I just
fun.
Didn't want to do that again. It was terrible. I'm surprised I was able to get through this recording tonight. We recorded an episode live here at TAM tonight, and it actually
with
went
a,
pretty
with
good.
With a very big crowd, I might say. It was very impressive.
It was like 75
people. I mean, 75 people.
Yes, it was. And they all clapped.
Yep.
But they're all true fans. We like our fans' quality over quantity.
Interesting. Okay. So where are your fans located? Is it strictly in Ottawa, or do you have fans all over the country?
Well, according to the internet, most of our fans are in the United States. And then it's like Canada, and then it goes down to other countries like Australia and UK, and as you would expect. And there's a bunch of it spread around Europe, and one in South Africa, and
every once in a while we get emails from someone from like, oh, I'm from Australia and I listen to your podcast, and it's like, oh my god.
I'm very proud to get a fan email from a soldier stationed in Afghanistan, a Canadian soldier who actually is from Ottawa. So that was kind of cool. So we're being listened to by the military in Afghanistan.
Cool.
Excellent. So you have a very good reach with your skeptical, rational speaking podcast. So we were sort of mentioning don't always see eye to eye on things. Topic wise, you tend to stay within the realm of science. Is that your particular backgrounds? Are you scientists and you're not on the air?
Well, we all have different backgrounds. Like, my background's computer science specifically.
And I'm in computer engineering, which is close to computer science.
Yeah, I'm educated computer engineering, and I do sort of, you know, computer system support.
What did Darren do? Like philosophy? Or I'm just assuming that. I don't know.
He did something else. He's just interested in philosophy.
We don't know what Darren does. He just gives us the apartment and he produces a segment every week.
And right. He does funny imitations sometimes.
Yeah, he's really good at doing impersonations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing is, like, you don't need to have, like, really an area of expertise or, like, being brought up to know about something, because there's this thing called Wikipedia. It's awesome.
So, and, like, and the straightdope.com as well.
Oh, yeah, we use that a lot.
Snopes.
So it's sort of like, once you ask a question, like, you know, one time I was at this party and someone said, oh, don't drink beer before liquor because that will make you sicker. You're supposed to have liquor before beer and you'll be in the clear. It's sort of like this, like, well-known saying. I was like, is that true? So just, you know, one Google search later and you've got, like, a whole bunch of sites, and all you have to do is basically summarize what you read on the internet, and next thing you know, you're an expert on beer versus liquor.
On the other hand, there's a lot of crap on the internet, so it does take a bit of skill to sift through what is reliable information and what is not. So you have to develop a bit of a BS detector, and I think most skeptics have that pretty good. You get just a general feel for red flags of when a site is trying to sell you something or isn't quite kosher.
How long do you guys spend researching your topics before you talk about them on the podcast?
I'm usually about 2 or 3 hours for your average topic. Usually do it the night before.
I'm about like 10 minutes. Half an hour. I try to pick topics I already know about.
You'll notice John doesn't do as many topics. But he does all the editing, so fair enough.
I do all the editing, so I assume that's enough. And I try to do interviews as well to pick up the slack.
I mean, how about you, Ethan? When you prepare a segment for your show, how long do you usually take?
Well, I'm a very busy person, so I usually prepare things about a week in advance.
Wow.
But, again, sometimes the topics that we generally cover vary in scope. Mm-hmm. We don't just focus on pure science. We focus on really any kind of social thing that we can apply skepticism to.
Didn't Don make up this new term of political skepticism? Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he made that up.
I hadn't heard that term before. But that was interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Carl Sagan promoted a concept of some form of political skepticism in Demon Haunted World. There's like an extra chapter tacked on the end. We talked about the Constitution and stuff and how people should be more skeptical of government.
Well, that does bring up a good point. There are two big topics that I do notice an absence of in the reality check, and one is religion and one is politics. Mm-hmm. Is that intentional?
That's completely intentional.
We've argued about politics before, like.
So on our show, we actually tend to agree on most things. You don't hear us argue a lot. The things we argue about is about the show, not about the topics, because the topics we cover are scientific. And with scientific topics, as long as we have the same background in science, like we're all quote unquote critical thinkers, we know how to look at science and come to similar conclusions. Those aren't controversial because we have a common base. Our only bias is that science is good.
We're all looking at the same facts.
And we're all sharing the same facts. But when it comes to something like politics, our backgrounds and our views on, you know, values of whether it's okay for someone to suffer in turn, you know, is it okay for suffering, or is it better to have fairness? Or so, like, there's the right wing versus the left wing, where left wing wants to reduce suffering at the cost of fairness, while the right wing wants more fairness for competition, free markets, even if it's going to cause some suffering for some individuals, or maybe a lot of individuals. And so the way you're brought up, maybe even your genetics, there's been some studies about some people being wired to be right wing and some people being wired to be left wing, that can cause schisms down the middle.
And that kind of thing we have talked about.
So we can talk about the science behind politics, but not necessarily politics themselves. Like, we're not going to talk about the G20 and whether the police were too brutal or not.
Hopefully not.
And like, people say, well, you need more critical thinking on police brutality and stuff. Like, come on, you can't just say, like, take any given topic and say, you have to apply critical thinking to it. Yes, you should apply critical thinking to everything, but there's a lot of areas where opinion matters a lot more and perspective matters a lot more than, say, science.
You could say, like, a situation where there's no right answer.
Yeah.
Maybe is the best way to put it.
Sometimes on some issues, you just have to agree to disagree.
Okay, so on the topic of religion then, I know you guys, I think, reasonably well. I would assume that you're on similar pages when it comes to your take on religion, but you guys don't discuss it very often on the show.
We try to take the tack that, like, the JREF does and the Skeptics Guide to the Universe does, where we focus on testable claims. So there are the realms where that science can even begin to address it. You know, so if someone has a personal belief in some vague kind of God, like a deist would have, that's not something that can be... you can't find an answer for that in Wikipedia. So we... But we don't want to exclude anybody from critical thinking and science, which is our focus. But we can tackle things that are testable. So, like, some particular claims of the Bible, like, you know, whether or not the Exodus happened, which I think Elon covered on your show at one point.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
early on.
Go ahead.
I just find that if you're trying to get people to be skeptical, sometimes it's a good idea not to go the religion angle, because it just polarizes a lot of people and turns them right off, and they're just not even going to listen to what you're going to say. So try to teach people skepticism, whether they're religious or not. If they want to use that skepticism and apply it to their religious beliefs, then all the best for them to do it. But then basically you're able to reach a wide audience with you know, a point of view that you want to have as many people as possible having.
And not to say that we've shied away. Like, we've talked about topics like, you know, evolution versus intelligent design. We were very critical of intelligent design. And
so where religion interferes with science, that's clear fair game.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And, like, we hope to teach people critical thinking skills and skepticism, and they can apply it to all areas of their life, whether it be religion, politics. So we want right-wing people to be more critical of right-wing leaders. We want left-wing people to be more critical of left-wing leaders. And we want people to be thinking critically about comic book superheroes, if they're interested in that.
Yep.
Be critical of video games. Be critical. You could use critical thinking in everything, but we like to use science because it's such an obvious example where you can clearly show that some things are wrong and some things are correct, some things are true, some things are bogus. Science is just such a very clear area. It makes for such interesting topics. You can even say it's taking the easy road by just doing science.
Though, again, we should, though, say that some of our, pretty much a lot of our segments that are like myths or something, it turns out that the answer is, it depends.
It's complex.
It's complex.
So science
sometimes
is,
it's not always so easy as black and white.
But when we say it's complex, we don't say, like, it's your opinion whether it's true or not. It's more like the reality is it's vague and there's no right answer.
Like, recently, Darren did his segment about is meat healthy to eat? And basically, it was just everything was like, let's look at heart attacks. And it's like, well, it depends. Let's look at cancer. It depends. And then just every single way that meat could be good or bad for you was like, there was really no answer that he gave. Except, I don't eat lean meat.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of people like Sam Harris, who are making the contention that science can make objective moral questions, that science can answer these questions?
I think science can address how humans approach moral questions, you know, whether a human's more likely to make a moral decision. You know, science can address how some people from some cultures can make a moral decision, but it can't actually settle the core moral truth, if there is such a thing out there. That is something that philosophy needs to address, and humans have to decide what is best for the common good. What science cannot address what the common good is. It can address how to reach the common good. So if everybody agrees on a certain goal, science can help you reach that goal. But people disagree on what those goals are, and science can't tell you what the goals should be. And that's where debate comes into play. I think, you know, left wing versus right wing on these issues, both sides have valid opinions on a lot of things. And I think our current system where left is debating the right, it's pretty good. Like, it's not the best. You know, it was Churchill that said democracy isn't a good form of government, but it's the best we have. Something like that.
Isn't along those lines.
Yeah.
It's the worst form except for all the other forms.
Yeah.
Something like that. Something like that. Exactly. Interesting. Okay. So let's shift gears out of sort of the debate over, say, science. Someone just opened the door. Away from science and religion and such topics, let's talk a bit about activism and advocacy. So what do you guys do locally to promote skepticism?
Well, we have monthly meetings where someone gives a presentation, like a PowerPoint presentation on a given topic, at a pub, and then we have drinks after and socialize. So that's one way we do it. And sometimes if there's like a psychic giving a talk in town that's prominent, like when Sylvia Brown came to town, we'll stand outside and hand out pamphlets that are very non-confrontational and non-aggressive. Usually the pamphlet we handed out twice so far, the most recent time was just a couple of days ago and I couldn't attend because I was in Vegas for TAM, where they handed out pamphlets that say how to be a psychic, and it basically explains all the tricks of cold reading to try to maybe get the people attending the psychic show to think critically about what they're seeing. Like, maybe it's not psychic powers, maybe the people are doing tricks and these are how the tricks work. And so it's to encourage people to think twice about what they're seeing. It's not to tell people what to think. We're not telling people that the psychic is a fraud, because we don't know the psychic is a fraud.
Well, we kind of do.
Well, we have the really strong assumption that the psychic is a fraud because it's much easier to do these tricks instead of to actually contact some kind of spirit world. It's more, Occam's razor said, the simplest explanation. It's probably that they're just using tricks. Mm-hmm. But
also, I think it's just a good strategy that you guys came up with. Like, instead of telling them, yeah, you guys are dumb to believe this, it's sort mm-hmm. of like, just, wouldn't you like to know how to also be a psychic? And then they can make the connection themselves of, wait a minute, maybe they're just using these tricks. Yeah. I thought it was really clever.
If you want to change people's minds, you have to let them change their minds themselves. You just give them the ammunition. As Michael Shermer has called it, planting seeds. You know, you'll never win an argument face to face with these things. You can just plant the seeds of doubt and have them come to it themselves. So it's kind of sucky that way, because you never really see the fruits of your labor. But sometimes you do. Sometimes people will write and say, you know, your show has made a difference for me and things like that.
One of the themes with TAM this year has been sort of the confrontation versus, I think, more a cooperative form of spreading the skeptical word. But even in those instances, you're going to come up to points where you have to debate mm-hmm. your points. And debate can get heated, it can get argumentative, it can get a little testy. Have you ever had situations where you've had a really hard time getting through somebody?
Well, I have a family member that's really big into alternative medicine. And when I first became a skeptic, I took a look at all the stuff he's doing, and I was like, I can't believe I've been allowing him to do this all these years. And so I immediately emailed him and spoke to him saying, you should stop doing this. This is complete crap and crazy. And that obviously got nowhere. And I shouldn't be telling this family member what to do, you know? And so over the years, I've kind of cooled it a bit, and I realized my relationship with this person is more valuable than whether or not he's buying herbal supplements or not. But I tried to be a positive influence. I wouldn't hide what my opinions were, but at the same time, I wouldn't be strident about it either. Eventually, I got him to just read a book. Like, I did a favor for him, And then right when I finished the favor, I gave him Simon Singh's book, Trick or Treatment. I said, take a look at this, and he did, and he modified some of his beliefs about alternative medicine. He decided that homeopathy is absolute junk. If you're going to try to talk someone out of something to do with alternative medicine, start with homeopathy, because it's the most clearly bogus form of it. So that was like a small win. But it took years. It takes a long time to influence people. You don't want to talk someone out of it. You're not going to convince them in that day. You want to influence them over time. If it's a close contact, like a relative or a friend. If it's just somebody on the street, you know, good luck. Mm-hmm. The best you could do is point them towards your podcast or website or something.
Cool. Any of you guys have personal anecdotes to share with us about?
I got in a pretty nasty arguing match with a creationist friend of mine, and then it didn't really get anywhere. I took a really kind of harsh tone with them, and obviously I didn't convince them of anything, so it was kind of like, well, that's not really the good way to go about it. Similarly, I got in a similar argument with another girl I know about vaccination, and her philosophy was something like, my doctor told me not to eat fish because I'm pregnant, and they also said that there's less mercury than a can of tuna or something in a vaccine, so I'm not going to get vaccinated because I'm pregnant. And I was like, okay, well, that's a bad
Adam,
idea.
You should tell about the argument you had with the person on the Transformers message board.
Which one?
What about the ladder and the cat? This is one of my first episodes I recorded of the Reality Check, so I've barely met Adam, and this is one of the first anecdotes I hear him say. It was the funniest thing.
Long story short, I think it was a guy pretending to be a girl saying there was a cat stuck up on a 40-foot-tall electrical pole, and the story of how she got it down after a week, because the cat didn't go down himself, because that's what cats would normally do, was that the fireman took a long pole that was 40 feet long and had a basket at the end and held it for half an hour while the cat got in. And I basically said, well, here's some basic math about levers and, you know, fulcrums and all that crap. And I was like, there's no way that this guy would ever be able to, you know, anyone could ever hold this thing, because it would just multiply the weight on the counter by basically the ratio of the length of it to how close it was being held together. And I got banned from that message board. I'm not welcome anymore.
No, and then there wasn't the part where you said, do you have any photos of this? And the person was like, no, I didn't have my camera on me. But then the email where they wrote, I don't have my camera on me, it said sent from my iPhone.
It was all really bad. It was I can't post tonight. And then, I'm posting this from a friend's phone. And I'm so you have a phone that doesn't have a camera and all this stuff like that. And it was just there's just, you know, you catch someone in a lie, and once you start to unravel it, it gets pretty bad. But that's not really me arguing with someone, but it's just...
But it is an example of you trying to be aggressively convincing them of something, and then getting banned from a message board because of it.
Apparently I was unreasonable in mocking the person.
Which is kind of an analogy, though.
Who was not basically admitting that it was all a load of crap.
You've also tried debating people on the Canadian Paranormal message board at PsyCan.
That was horrible.
Yeah, so there's a message board called PsyCan, PSICAN. I think it's .com, it might be .org.
Yeah.
And it's just basically, it's the opposite of the skeptic movement, where it's basically people who believe everything, as opposed to being skeptical
basically,
of everything.
Just the other Reality Check?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they have a podcast. I hope they do. Where it's all they talk about is, you know, there's a section there on UFOs and ghosts and psychics and stuff. The alternative medicine's not in there. They probably have their own message board. So it's weird, how these different pseudosciences clump together. What do UFOs and ghosts have to do with each other at all? The only thing they have to do with each other is that they don't really exist. That's the only thing that they have in common. Yet believers somehow group them together.
It seems people have this tendency to believe things that aren't true and not believe some that are true sometimes. And Michael Shermer's talk today about pattern recognition. I mean, basically pattern recognition in more things than just images, but seeing conspiracy theories where they're not there and stuff like that. I think that may come into it. People who have a tendency to see patterns that aren't there will have tendencies towards religious beliefs, towards belief in the paranormal, towards conspiracy theories, all kinds of things like that. And I think maybe that gives an explanation why people are generally not people don't really just have one thing that they're kind of weird about believing. People generally have a lot of things that they're weird about believing.
Though I guess, yeah. And the thing is, like, getting back to your original question, it seems like from these anecdotes that we've told, that we've heard, and probably from all of our experiences, like, being aggressive with people to try to convince them of something just doesn't work. It's just sort of, you know, if you show them... I remember one time with the UBC Freethinkers, we had an event where a guy was giving a talk about how to get people to accept atheists more, and pretty much this guy had actually done research, and the answer was just sort of like, show them that, you know, just like sort of expose to them the fact that atheists are just like you, and like, you know, and sort of see, and sort of in the same way with these kinds of beliefs, like if you just sort of say like, I'm actually, you know, just sort of even expose them to the fact that I'm a normal person, we could be friends, by the way, I don't really believe in this, it's up to you to ask me, maybe even like, why don't you believe in it, like sort of just let them know that like there's actually reasons not to, but don't put it in their face.
It's kind of like the gay activist movement, where they kind of got a lot of traction when they pointed out, you know, when they encouraged gay people to come out of the closet and just admit to their family and friends and neighbors, like, I'm a normal person, but I'm gay, get used to it. In order to destroy the stereotype that gays are flamboyant and in your face and stuff, but gays are normal people, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so skeptics or atheists or whatever, just do that as well. And just try to influence people around you by being a role model. Just live
the way you want to. I think it works. Like, I know from my own personal experience, for example, my dad is a spiritual guy. Like, he's a believer in lots of things. But then, you know, there was all this controversy when H1N1 was coming out, which isn't related to spiritualism at all. And he knows that I'm, like, more inclined to look into what the science says about just all topics. And so he was like, Elon, what do you think about this H1N1 thing? Should I get vaccinated? And I was like, well, yeah, the evidence says that, you know, that's the best way to protect yourself, and there's no reason to think it won't work. And, you know, and I think he really bought what I was saying, just because, you know...
So if you just express your opinions on the scientific facts and you don't make it personal, you don't never tell anyone that they're wrong, because then they'll never come up to you again to ask your opinion, because people don't like being told they're wrong. But if instead you focus on the facts and show what the facts say, they might learn something, and they'll want to talk to you again because they'll want to learn something more. But they don't want to learn that they're wrong. They just want to learn things, mm-hmm. period.
Well, I'll wrap things up here since it is getting ridiculously late and we have to go drink.
Drink some more.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, why don't you sign off for us here?
Think better to act better.
Peace out.
Be skeptical, not susceptible.
Excellent. And this is Ethan, your freethinking historian, saying, Tam is so awesome.
Yeah. Your freethinker is awesome. And so is the reality check.
You should listen to both. And so is the Cairo... What was that other one we just...
The Arcologist?
The Arcologist. And so is the webcomic.
The placebo effect. The placebo effect.
This is Phil Plait of BadAstronomy.com, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM for UBC in Vancouver, British Columbia.
The state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a cry. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
Uh-huh. You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Bradley Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So our thanks to the cast of The Reality Check for joining us at TAM. I look forward to hearing the latest episode of The Reality Check.
Thanks, Ethan. Elon, holy crap. See, he's out. He's moved to Ottawa, and I already forget his name.
Yeah, well, you forget everybody's name.
Sure, Bob.
Yeah. Well, we're actually running out of time here on Radio Free Thinker, so we should head on to our skeptical highlights for the day.
I've got one that I'm sort of doing as a proxy for the UBC
Freethinkers
Society. acclaimed LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender skeptic, Greta Christian, is kicking off her speaking tour here in British Columbia. She's got two lectures, one at Simon Fraser in the afternoon, 2:30 to 4:30 in AQ3005. That's going to be on the sexual morality of traditional religions tends to be based not on solid ethical principles, but on a set of taboos about what kinds of sex God does or does not want people to have. And while sexually positive communities offer a more thoughtful view on sexual morality, it still often frames sexuality in posits by spiritual experience. What are some atheist alternatives to these views? How can atheist views view sexual ethics without belief in God? And how can atheism view sexual transcendence without a belief in the supernatural? The second lecture, which is going to be held right here in UBC in the Woodward's Building, lecture hall three at 7 p.m., is on diversity in the atheist movement. The most visible representative of the atheist movement tend to be white men. Like me and Ethan.
Sorry.
Is this a problem? No. But if it is, should the atheist movement be doing something about it? And if so, what? Which actually is something that we've talked about on the show off air quite a few times about, you know, do we have a right to speak as Vancouver's only skeptic radio show being limited to being white males, which I think as long as you keep a proper skeptic mindset and you're humble in your opinions, you can get away with that. But does anyone else have any opinions out there about diversity on our show? Someone should send us an email to radio.freethinker@gmail.com. We actually got some feedback last week. I asked people to give us ideas for Vancouver Skeptic Party, which is an idea we're working with to create a political party for municipalities. And people have been giving in some ideas as far as what they would expect a secular party to do. Please keep bringing those in, too.
Yeah, very important issue. I have two skeptical highlights. The first one is Skeptics in the Pub, which is tomorrow, September 1st at 7:30, the Billy Bishop in Kitsilano here in Vancouver. Always a great time. On September 11th, we have the CFI Book Club at the Grind Coffee Shop. And the book that we're reading for that for this month is The Physics of Star Trek by Lawrence Krauss. And if you don't have a copy, I'm sure the library has one, and you can also purchase one from CFI. And wow.
good pimping CFI there.
Well, it's important.
Although it is important that you get the Physics of Star Trek and not Star Trek and Science. I think there's another one that's
similarly also philosophy in Star Trek. Yes. And, like, there is philosophy in pretty much everything, like Seinfeld, for instance, which might actually be a good book, but focus on physics here of Star Trek.
What is the book about, do you know?
Well, basically, Lawrence Krauss takes sort of the common Star Trek things like the transporter, warp drive, inertial dampeners. It explains sort of the actual science behind it. It's actually a very fun, easy-to-read book. I think anybody, you don't have to be a physics major, I think you can enjoy it. It's even a Star Trek fan, but especially really enjoy it. So,
Is it realistic? We were talking before the air about Ichiya Kaku and how he's kind of done a bit of a faux pas. Anyone who listens to SGU will know about his claim that UFOs are real. But this guy is a much more...
Lawrence Krauss is well known for being very down to earth. He was the one who did a talk at, I can't remember, I think it was the Beyond Belief conference last year, and he was the one who really nailed down Deepak's bulldog, the person that we met a couple of months ago, which earned, I think, the wrath of Deepak and his entourage. So you can expect pretty good things from Lawrence Krauss. So we're running out of time here on Radio Free Thinker. Again, our recommendations, check out our webpage, www.radiofreethinker.com, and read all about our blogs and our show notes. You can read Don's latest post. You can also follow us on Twitter at CITRRFT. That's right. So check us out on Twitter and online.
And subscribe in iTunes. And even if you don't listen to the show, get everyone to subscribe because that just spreads the word better.
Yeah, nobody watches the show, as far as I know.
I watch it.
Okay.
Got a little digital meter that goes up and down.
Alrighty then. Well, this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver, saying thanks for listening.
And this is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
See you next week, folks.
Are you a UBC student taking first-year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.